Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Michael Brown reporting. Several attackers strapped with explosives are blamed for killing at least 42 people in the Syrian city of Homs Saturday. The Syrian Observatory for Human Rights says at least six attackers blew themselves up near the headquarters of both the state security and military intelligence. There has been no immediate claim of responsibility for the deadly attacks. We're continuing to follow this developing story. Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jaber made a historic visit to Baghdad Saturday, marking the highest level visit by a Saudi official to Iraq since 1990. Edward Uranian reports.
The visit by Saudi Foreign Minister Adel Al-Jaber to Baghdad Saturday took many observers by surprise amid lingering tensions between the two neighbors. It comes as Iraqi government forces advance further into the mostly Sunni city of Mosul. The announcement that Saudi Arabia would name a new ambassador to Iraq appears to mark a fresh effort to improve ties between Iraq's Shiite-dominated government and its large Sunni neighbor to the south. Both sides vowed to redouble efforts to fight the Islamic State group and other forms of militant Islam. Saudi Arabia also pledged to donate $9 million to help Iraqi refugees who have fled from mostly Sunni regions of Anbar province and Mosul. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Iraqi military officials say U.S.-backed forces are facing a stiffer resistance as soldiers push deeper into the western half of Mosul, the last refuge of the Islamic State group in Iraq. The jihadists have also started lighting fires in the streets to disguise their positions. This is VOA News. Democratic Party officials are poised to elect a leader to oversee the formidable task of rebuilding a Democratic Party after losing to the White House and losing several congressional seats. Hundreds of members of the Democratic National Committee will vote in Atlanta Saturday to elect a new party chairman. The frontrunners are Minnesota Congressman Keith Ellison and Tom Perez, the former Labor Secretary under President Barack Obama. The task ahead for the new chairman include developing a roster of potential candidates to challenge Mr. Trump in the 2020 presidential election. Thousands of protesters in the Philippines' capital of Manila are marking Saturday's anniversary of the People's Power Revolution that unseated dictator Ferdinand Marcos 31 years ago. The uprising brought to an end a 20-year rule marked by corruption, scandals, and human rights abuses. President Rodrigo Duterte last year allowed Marcos' body to be buried in a hero cemetery, which led to massive outcry among Filipinos who opposed the dictator. Pakistan disclosed Saturday that it is engaged in negotiations with Afghanistan on developing a joint mechanism to address mutual cross-border terrorism concerns, and both sides could formalize a deal next week. Tensions worsened this month when Pakistani leaders blamed militants sheltering on the Afghan side for a series of suicide bombings and other attacks across the country that killed scores of people. The International Organization for Migration is reporting a surge in the number of migrant deaths on the Mediterranean Sea's central route linking Libya to Italy in the first 2 months of the year. Lisa Schlein reports.
The International Organization for Migration estimates 326 migrants and refugees have died this year while transiting by sea from Libya to Italy. While the numbers are alarming, IOM spokesman Joel Millman says they do not reflect the full scope of the sea tragedies.
There's a thriving business in kidnapping right now in Libya where people are being taken off the street, held to paid ransom, and then forced into these boats, just because the ransom takers are done with them and they don't want to try to pick them up again.
He says smugglers have been stealing engines from the boats and leaving the vessels drifting in the water with people aboard. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Senior Trump administration officials have confirmed White House Chief of Staff Reince Priebus had a conversation with a senior FBI official about published news reports on alleged communications between officials from Mr. Trump's presidential campaign and Russia. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown reporting.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of The Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clotty in Washington.
Amnesty International, for reasons best known to them, had never one day, consulted with the Algerian armed forces to partner with them on issues that have to do with this kind of thing. Because they know that if they come, doors are always open and they will not achieve what they want to achieve.
Amnesty International accuses Nigerian security forces of committing serious human rights violations.
Everyone who can see, know that there is tremendous turmoil in South Sudan. The war is continuing. Economic problems are deteriorating.
South Sudanese President Salva Kiir vows to neutralize anti-peace elements across the country.
The African Freedom of Expression Exchange has called on the Cameroonian government to restore internet connection and as well as release all those who have been arrested during the protest which began last year.
And the African Freedom of Expression group calls on the Cameroonian government to restore internet connection services to English-speaking parts of the country. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Amnesty International, a human rights group, has accused Nigerian security forces of committing serious human rights violations in the fight against Boko Haram. In its latest report, the right group said the police and the military committed torture and other ill treatment. It also said the military continued to carry out arbitrary arrests, detentions, and extrajudicial executions of people suspected of being Boko Haram fighters. Acts, which Amnesty International says amounted to war crimes and possible crimes against humanity. For reaction, I reached Brigadier General Rabi Abubakar, the director of the Nigerian Defense Information.
This report is not the first time, the Amnesty is fabricating this kind of very unfounded and biased and unholy reports against the military operations of Nigeria. Two, there has always been criticism, they bent on criticizing the military for reason that's not the left. So in essence, what I'm trying to say is all the reports which they released is lopsided. It's a report which lacks, if I may reply it to, accountability, because it's a report which is one-sided. It's a report which has no consultation with the key stakeholders, especially the military. So they concocted that report based on what they wanted to achieve. And I believe what we are doing as the military and other security agencies in our country is to ensure that we bring stability and peace, which we need to develop.
Brigadier General Abubakar, the report cited Nigerian soldiers committed abuses and that they anticipate that the military will investigate and punish the alleged perpetrators instead of rejecting the report.
No, you see, if you recall, this is not the first time, as I said, this has been an occurring report which Amnesty always released on their own. Under a well-respected organization like Amnesty, we expect them to reach out, go out of the box to find out what exactly happened. But they are now relying on what people told them. And most times, they even ask those who, according to them, perceived to be the victims. And under normal situation, whoever will tell you stories will tell you something that will benefit him, something that will switch his purpose. So it is against this background that we are saying, no, this report is not a reflection of the armed forces. So this report, says the list, Mr. Peter, is something which they have already planned to do for reasons best known to them. However, we will continue, to partner with any group, with any NGO, and not NGO. And internationally, there is a procedure, that has to do with operating non-governmental organizations that operate in the country. There are certain things which they are not supposed to do, one of which is they must be neutral, they must not meddle into local politics, and all these things are done by embassy. Why must two take sides?
Brigadier General, recently the U.S. made an overture to cooperate and share intelligence with the Nigerian military in the fight against Boko Haram, as well as in assistance in other areas. Does this report undermine that cooperation because it will raise some concerns in Washington, perhaps?
That is the more reason why we vehemently, you know, reject this report. You remember the AFRIHAC commander was in Nigeria last 3 days and visited the defense headquarters here in Nigeria, and we told them all the efforts that we are putting in place, including establishing human rights desks in all our operational areas and in all our units and formations. So this is a welcome development which he carries. And his words, I'm quoting him, he said that the U.S. will continue to consider Nigeria as one of the key, you know, allies to the United States of America, and it is ready to ensure that Nigeria remains one as a strong country, and is ready to give Nigeria all what it wants, you know, to ensure that it quenches the current challenges, especially Boko Haram terrorists. Fighting terrorism is not a one-country issue. It requires a collective effort of all nations to defeat insurgency or terrorism.
What will be the relationship between the Nigerian military and Amnesty International locally and internationally going forward? Because you made reference to the fact that there are procedures of which you think Amnesty International had flouted, including not being biased, among other concerns that you raised.
As I'm speaking with you, all the issues they raised were issues that they raised about 2 years ago, and they were all adequately counted with facts and figures from the military. Human rights group always come to defense headquarters in Nigeria to find out or to synergize with us on how to improve our operations, welfare-wise, human rights, and what to do. And we always took them by their words, and we injected all the corrections, all the amendments, all the observations they made. But Amnesty International, for reason best known to them, had never for one day, you know, consulted with the Nigerian armed forces to partner with them on issues that have to do with this kind of thing. Because they know that if they come, our doors are always open and they will not achieve what they want to achieve.
Brigadier General Rabi Abubakar is the director of the Nigerian Defense Information. He spoke with me from the capital, Abuja. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has vowed to neutralize anti-peace elements in the country. He also promised to ensure that aid agencies have full access to all areas where citizens need assistance due to the drought that has plagued the East African region. The president's remarks came after some top government officials recently resigned, citing Mr. Kiir's poor leadership skills and what they said was the poor direction of the country. Meanwhile, the administration in Juba has denied reports of ongoing conflict in parts of the country. For the latest development in South Sudan, I reached Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs.
I think that is very unrealistic. And in fact, I do not believe the army of South Sudan is capable of doing what he wants to achieve. The best hope for South Sudan is the full implementation in both law and in spirit, the 2015 agreement, which provides for power sharing. And this, to me, is the only way forward for South Sudan.
But several of his ministers or government officials have denied that the conflict that has plunged the country nearly into chaos is no more, and that they are implementing the peace agreement following his decision to relieve former First Vice President Dr. Riek Machar of his duty and appointed Thabang Dengai to join him in the Unity Transitional Government ahead of a possible election. What do you say to some of their statements sharply denying that there is any conflict going on?
Well, you know, there are people who believe a pure information campaign can cover a serious problem. I'm aware of the statements of the spokespersons of South Sudanese government, but that is not true. Everyone who can see knows that there is tremendous turmoil in South Sudan. The war is continuing. Economic problems are deteriorating. We are hearing about defections from those who were part of the agreement. And we are now hearing, which is most serious of all, the threat of famine that puts a large part of the population of South Sudan in jeopardy. So it is unrealistic for these spokesmen and the administration to talk about normalcy where there is no normal situation.
Why hasn't the government been able to solve this drought problem that has generated this kind of need?
Yeah, but you see, if you have a government, major players are much more concerned about strengthening their control of the government and ignoring significant part of the population. That's what you get. You must try to bring all the people of South Sudan to boost the economy of South Sudan. I had read a report that President Salva Kiir gave orders for the resumption of oil export. But that is a mirage, because you cannot do it. And I don't think the companies are going to return to South Sudan, where you have fighting going on and political turmoil. You must first solve the political problem. And no matter of publication or talk in the media can conceal the fact that today there is no political stability in South Sudan. And when you have that situation, issues of famine arise, because the attention of the government is not devoted to solving the economic and social problem. Rather, it seems to me that they are more concerned of ensuring the supremacy of one group against the other.
Talking about the drought, President Salva Kiir has pledged to ensure that aid agencies have full access to all areas where people need assistance due to the drought plaguing the East African nation. Is this an admission that there is a serious problem of food shortage in the country and the government is at this moment unable to meet those challenges?
You know, if you watch carefully what is going on in South Sudan, it would appear at times that President Salva Kiir may not be in full control of his supporters. There may be one time when the spokesman will give certain picture, and the next day he will come and give what might be a contrary view of the situation. I really think that he may be having difficulties. In fact, we have heard reports that there are people within his government who may not want to toe the line that he may want to toe in terms of reconciliation. But you cannot devote part of your attention to fighting a political war and then ignore. Yes, there has been drought in South Sudan. But what is happening today is more man-made.
Dr. James Jonah is the former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. He spoke with me from New York. The African Freedom of Expression Exchange, or AFEX, has called on President Paul Biya's government to restore internet connection services cut for the last 40 days in the English-speaking parts of the country. AFEX also expressed concern that the administration in Yaounde has so far refused to heed several calls from both local and international human rights groups to unblock the internet and release those arrested. But Information Minister Issa Chiroma Bakare says those arrested will be tried in accordance with the country's laws. For more regarding the call to restore internet connection, I reach Patricia Antonio from the African Freedom of Expression Exchange, or AFEX.
The African Freedom of Expression Exchange has called on the Cameroonian government to restore internet connection and as well as release all those who have been arrested during the protest, which began last year in Cameroon. This is not the first time we are calling on the Cameroonian government to protect freedom of expression in the two regions, that is the northwest and southwest regions in Cameroon. On January 24 this year, 2017, the African Freedom of Expression Exchange called on the Cameroonian government to protect freedom of expression and human rights during the protest. And then also, this was as a result of a number of violations we had that were reported to AFEX, and we decided to intervene.
I spoke with the Cameroonian Information Minister, Issa Chiroma Bakare, who maintains that agitators in the English-speaking areas have been using the internet, social media platforms like WhatsApp, to create unnecessary tension and destabilize the region, and that the government is mandated by the Constitution to maintain law and order. So this forms part of maintaining some semblance of control in the area. What do you say to that?
But depriving citizens of their rights to express themselves is also a violation of their fundamental human rights, that is freedom of expression. And there are international frameworks that have identified internet shutdowns as a human rights violation. So it's quite unfortunate that citizens can be deprived of internet for 40 days in today's technologically inclined world, where the internet is used to promote development. So yes, the internet is a tool for people to use to mobilize and express themselves, but it doesn't mean that we restrict their rights to express themselves by shutting down the internet. It is also a violation of their fundamental human rights.
The so-called agitators, as described by the government, including Dr. Felix Agbobala and Dr. Fontaine Neba, the information minister said, were caught in the act, creating disaffection and creating instability, fomenting trouble in the English-speaking parts of Cameroon. How do you address some of these concerns? Because AFEX, as you said, is demanding their release, unconditional release.
Yes. What we know is that the leaders of the consortium, which was set up in December when the protest started, the objective was to dialogue with government and to serve as a platform to express the interests of the people of Southern Cameroon. So arresting the leaders who were expressing themselves and trying to express their right to freedom of expression is conflicting, because they were trying to express themselves and to express the way the people are feeling. And then you arrest them. The Cameroonian constitution, in its preamble, allows for freedom of expression. So that is why I'm saying that it's a difficult situation. But then we are calling on the government to, in its attempts to restore stability and peace in Cameroon, it should also recognize that citizens have the right to express themselves and the right to freedom of association and freedom of assembly. That is why we are insisting and still calling on the government to restore the internet connectivity, as well as release those who have been arrested.
Supporters of the government have said that international community, as well as AFEX, calling on them to release these agitators, as they call them, is interfering in the internal dynamics of Cameroon, and that the government reserves the right, protected or mandated by the Constitution, to ensure the country's territorial integrity is maintained. How do you react to such from the government?
Yes, every country has a constitution, but we should also bear in mind that Cameroon is signatory to other international frameworks and regional frameworks, such as the Universal Declaration on Human Rights. The Universal Declaration urges countries to protect freedom of expression and human rights. So if you are signatory to this important framework, which is globally accepted and to which Cameroon is signatory, then also you have the right to acknowledge these international frameworks in resolving such difficult situations.
Patricia Antonio is the spokesperson for the African Freedom of Expression Exchange, or AFEX. She spoke with me from the Guinean capital, Accra. The International Organization for Migration, or IOM, says it is concerned about the latest anti-immigrant violence in South Africa and warns of a further escalation if the root causes of the xenophobic riots are not tackled. For VOA, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The International Organization for Migration condemns the spate of anti-immigrant violence organized by individual citizens and community associations in Rosettenville, south of Johannesburg, and in the South African capital of Pretoria. It is calling for calm and for an end to the attacks, looting, and burning of property owned by foreign nationals earlier this week. South African protesters accused the African migrants of taking their jobs and being responsible for a rise in crime. IOM spokesman Itai Viriri says those who have grievances against the migrants should not take law into their own hands. They should air their complaints with the local authorities.
Because that there's no real tangible evidence that there's an increase in crime because of migrants. On the contrary, research shows that immigrants who go to South Africa mostly do not harm the long-term employment prospects and wages of native-born workers. In fact, quite a lot of them create small businesses. And in fact, most of those who are being targeted now are small business owners.
Viriri tells VOA that IOM fears the violence could get worse because migrants say they plan to mobilize themselves for their own protection.
Right now, what is happening is that we have a situation whereby some of the migrants are, unlike last time, saying that they're going to protect themselves. And by that virtue, it sort of escalates the whole situation. Before, we didn't have maybe a situation whereby the migrants said they were going to stand up for themselves or not wait for police protection. Obviously, that's very worrisome because it escalates the whole situation.
Indeed, a standoff between anti-immigrant protesters and migrants during a march organized by the Mamelodi Concerned Residents in Pretoria Friday turned violent. Police had to use tear gas, rubber bullets, and water cannon to try to disperse the groups. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The U.S. was declared measles-free 15 years ago, thanks to the development of a vaccine. But now doctors are worried that it will change because so many parents in the U.S. are deciding not to give vaccines for measles or other deadly diseases to their children. VOA's Carol Pearson has more.
The government of Yemen and the World Health Organization are rushing to get 5 million children immunized against polio. While in the U.S., some parents choose not to get their kids vaccinated. Dr. Peter Hotez develops vaccines and is a dean at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston. He spoke to VOA by Skype.
What's happened here in Texas is quite worrisome.
What's happening in Texas is an active anti-vaccine movement.
It's gotten very well organized to the point now where we have almost 50,000 kids whose families have opted them out of getting vaccinated.
Hotez and other doctors are concerned that diseases which have been eliminated in the U.S. or are rarely seen will make a comeback. They're especially concerned about measles, a highly contagious, often debilitating, and even deadly disease. Doctors are worried that parents are getting the wrong messages from various celebrities and even from Donald Trump. During a Republican debate well before Election Day, candidate Trump linked vaccines with autism.
Just the other day, 2 years old, 2.5 years old, a child, a beautiful child, went to have the vaccine and came back and a week later got a tremendous fever, got very, very sick, now is autistic.
But Hotez says there is no connection.
I'm a vaccine scientist. I make vaccines for neglected tropical diseases, poverty-related neglected diseases. I'm also the parent of a child who's now an adult, actually. I have an adult daughter who has autism and other mental disabilities. And we have massive amounts of data now showing that the brains of kids with autism have their altered neurologic state early on in pregnancy, well before they ever see vaccines.
Hotez is concerned that deadly diseases like measles will once again return to the U.S. He is also afraid that the movement will spread around the world to countries with large populations like India, China, and Nigeria.
My big worry is we're gonna revisit the past unless we can stop this anti-vaccine trend.
And that's why Hotez is speaking out. He says it's time for scientists to take time away from their research and make their voices heard so parents can make the right choices and prevent their children from suffering devastating, preventable diseases. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Washington.
You are listening to Nightline Africa on the English service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington, D.C. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. And right now it's time for music from our African collection.
Mama Africa.
I came, I saw, I conquered. Now then, I come, remember, say.
she's hey, shout out. For everybody, shout out. You know my people, shout out. Oh, shout out. Hey, hey, shout out. And everybody, shout out. My sexy lady, shout out to you. Hey, shout out. Hey, hey. Get quiet, money now, shala. Get quiet, shala. Get quiet, shala. Get quiet, everybody, shala. Shout out to my guys and shout out to my niggas. All the people we believe us. Shout out to my friends and my people and my fellas. Anytime I come, so the boys, them are jealous. Sometime I go, 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 go. Them, they say me, I'm a go, go, go. I they make them, they go, low, go, low. See the people start go, go. Long time I go, go. Them say me, I they go, low. Now they make them start go, go. If they pull them, believe me.
Anytime I come, so the people happy. I they make everybody jolly.
That was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English service of The Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and our engineer for today, Justin Thwaite, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, an eagle too long amongst chickens soon forgets to fly. I'm your host, Peter Clotet, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned about the events depicted in a shocking video that appears to show the summary execution of unarmed civilians by elements of the armed forces of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Such extrajudicial killing, if confirmed, would constitute gross violations of human rights and threatens to incite widespread violence and instability in an already fragile country, said State Department Acting Spokesperson Mark Toner. According to the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights, Zaid Ra'ad Al Hussein, there are multiple credible allegations of massive human rights violations in Kasai, Kasai Central, Kasai Oriental, and Lomami provinces amid a sharp deterioration in security situation there, including people being targeted by soldiers for their alleged affiliation with a local militia. The Democratic Republic of the Congo continues to confront significant political, economic, social, and security challenges. Key among these challenges is the need for security sector reform and an end to impunity. Progress in this area, not just in the Kasai's but throughout the DRC's vast territory, will require significant political leadership and will. A more stable security environment and long-lasting peace will also require political stability and accountability. To this end, we continue to urge all sides to make swift progress in implementation of the December 31st agreement so that the DRC can hold credible elections in 2017 and proceed to a peaceful, democratic transfer of power. We call upon the government of the Democratic Republic of Congo, said Acting Spokesperson Toner, to launch an immediate and thorough investigation in collaboration with international organizations responsible for monitoring human rights, to identify those who perpetrated such heinous abuses, and to hold accountable any individual proven to have been involved. At the same time, we cannot lose focus on continued insecurity in eastern DRC, where decades of conflict between rival militias have resulted in human rights violations, economic hardship, and continued insecurity. The financing of armed groups from the illicit trade in minerals remains a concern despite progress in responsible sourcing. Peace, security, and political stability are all keys to the DRC realizing its potential. The United States continues to stand as a partner with the Congolese people to hold those who commit human rights violations accountable as we work together to support a stable, democratic, and prosperous DRC.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.